to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like X.com users who thought they were getting away with something but soon won't be. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckhardt and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I'm joined this week as every week by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
I'm doing okay. The weather's getting nice. New York has won a soccer game. I just had two green shakes because I felt bad about only eating like six pieces of broccoli as my only greens today.
Oh, so I thought you meant shamrock shakes.
What a great character for a bit. It's like a guy who thinks green shakes are just shamrock shakes, and he's like, I'm not getting any thinner. What's going on? I have three green shakes a day.
Well, good, good. I'm glad. Are you feeling healthier or are you just feeling fuller?
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Oh,
what do you mean? What
does
that mean?
That I'm feel healthier eating green shakes, but I wouldn't be if I was also going to
eating
the gym
salads
every day and yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You do what you can. It's like fingers in a dam when you get to our age, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I feel it acutely. Today I didn't eat so hot. I went on a nice healthy hike, but I bracketed it all with pretty much just fried foods. I had a very good fish taco situation at home tonight.
Okay.
I can't help it, Trey. When my wife makes me dinner, I love it. I can't help it.
Wait, what's wrong with that?
It's just, you know, it's bad feminism, Trey. I shouldn't relish it as much as I do.
Well, you shouldn't be sitting like tugging or playing playing video games while she's doing it or something. Like,
I shouldn't. You don't think I should beat off while my wife makes dinner?
For me, it's like a communal activity. It's a communal activity. You know what the best benefit of cooking
Trey,
dinner with your
exactly
wife is?
But Trey, no, that's exactly what I'm saying. No. I didn't say I love it when I make dinner with my wife. I didn't say I love it when my wife makes dinner and I make the salad.
Guy,
I love it.
I read that and I hear you, and I frankly am not surprised. But the best part of making dinner with your wife is that it's over faster. It's like twice as fast.
Oh, that's not true for us. We're just as slow when it's the both of us. It doesn't move any faster at all.
I love cooking. That's the other thing. Like, I'll make
I
dinner
love cooking
for my
too.
I'll cook for my wife, but then it takes like an hour and
I
a half.
I do that too. I love to do that. Let me be clear. That makes me very happy.
Let me be
but
clear.
But does it make me lean back, pat my belly, and have a big Joker-sized smile across my face? Does it give me the sadistic glee of sitting down to a meal I had nothing to do with and yet was prepared fresh for me in my home? No, it does not.
Okay, after all this information now in my brain, yeah, dude, you're one sick cookie. That's a fucked up, you gotta take that up with your therapist, man.
You hate trad culture.
I do.
You can't. You reject modernity, Trey. Embrace tradition.
I know. Every tradition Irish bone in my body is like breaking free.
Opening of unbuckling your belt and unbuttoning the top button of your pants. The tradition
I just couldn't do it.
Crack it open a cold one.
The anxiety I would have of someone cooking for me and me not doing anything, I can't do that. It's like so... I hate when my wife cleans and I'm not cleaning. It's the worst feeling. I have to do
something. Oh, sure. Absolutely. That I 100% agree with. Because I think that the treat is less delectable. The treat is the pleasure of living in a clean house. And that's a more... And honestly, it's nice, but it's harder to enjoy if you... Even just to say like, oh, okay, I hired somebody to do this. You know, like if you like the tidying, it's the whole, I'm so sorry to double red pill this whole conversation, but it's the Jordan Peterson of it all, which is to say the effort expended is part of the reward. I don't know that that's what he says. I haven't read anything that he said. I know, but it's true, and it's one of the reasons that he tells you to clean your room or fucking whatever. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that the pleasure that I experienced could be matched by anything except a first win for NYCFC in the 10th season of its life here.
That's
on this.
That's not true. We beat Toronto.
Oh, that's right.
What an awful start to this podcast.
But doesn't it feel like it? I totally forgot about the Toronto win. Stupid.
It's already been a long season, and it just
feels
started.
Like it. It feels like it was last season. It feels like the narrative is so thoroughly entrenched. This isn't even really like my normal bullshit of like not paying any attention. I was paying attention to that part. I've been paying close attention, and I still felt that way. So I'm claiming this as an emotional truth. This is a first emotional win of the season because this season has been three seasons long. And we're into the, what, eighth match? Anyway, congratulations. We did it. Hooray. We snapped the streak. We claimed some points. We won a must-win game. Good things can happen to bad teams. Why do they happen to bad teams, Trey? What do you credit NYCFC with that made this game go right? Because, of course, early on you were texting, boy, oh boy, here we are again. What the fuck are we going to talk about when it's the same match over and over again? And then the dam broke.
Yeah, it was impressive to some extent because, you know, the narratives around this team about creating chances and things and as well as falling apart towards the ends of matches or giving up a goal early, like managing, using the experience of the previous two games before it, or even three, if you want to take positives out of that Cincinnati game, just like using that road experience and these tough matches. And then even Atlanta, where you're like, we should have won, but at least we're better. Like just kind of building on everything we've learned in all those games really came to fruition in this one. Obviously, you want to start a little better. First half was a little rough when it comes to consistency and building more efficiency in the offense. But at the same time, this was our first match, probably beginning to end, where we did feel like the better team on the field. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. We're against the worst team in the league. The only team worse than us. But there was moments like, you know, and I think that's what's so frustrating and probably what's such a big confidence builder for this team after this match is the fact that like against Charlotte and against some of these and the Portland losing that match is like the mentality aspect, of course, is huge. And when you get scored on early or when you fall behind, it's as we have done, dropping points from winning positions like Atlanta. It's like this feeling of the team, not everything has to go perfect for them to win. And in this case, they proved that wrong. They didn't necessarily have to have a perfect game. They could be a little sloppy, but the bones were still strong enough to at least pull out a result in this match, and pretty solidly and convincingly, in my opinion. So I take a positive of, like, you know, a lot of the same, but managed to squeeze just a little extra juice out of that lemon and get a good result.
Well, look, if there's a difference to point to, it's the easiest and most obvious one, and it's Ojeda, right? I mean, and I'm curious as to like what you're as the first and foremost Ojeda watcher in the NYCFC fan base. I think there's you can read this as he's ready for starting minutes, he's ready for headlines, or as there's a lot of delivery on promise here, but there's no reason to expect to see him start for this side anytime soon. Did you see enough from Ojeda? Okay, well, goal accepted, because of course the goal is a banger, it's a screamer, it's very fucking cool and it's very fucking exciting, and it's great that we have gutsy, gumption-filled players who can put the ball in the back of the net. That's what we've been craving. It's not his only job. Did he do his job aside from that well enough to that we're going to see more of him than we've been seeing?
I think it's going to take a little more time for him to get a little more comfortable in this league and comfortable on this team. because I don't think we necessarily saw. I mean, clearly it's impossible to ask someone in their first start that's like 18 years old to reach their full potential. But of course, you can see those aspects of his game throughout this match in his first start. And I would like to see him test back lines a little more, make a little more incisive passing, things like that. But getting himself into good positions and being a good running mate next to Santi, next to Hannes, like, those things are really intriguing to me. I find it, you can see the fit on this team, right? I think it's super interesting that we keep, like, grabbing players. There's the huge conversation, one of the big underlying conversations of the season, and we've talked about it almost every, touched on it almost every podcast, is, like, the Nick Cushing style and the system, the tactical system that he likes to go with. And it's clearly, like, this inverted wingers trying to create width by having overlapping fullbacks. That's not new to CFG or to NYCFC, but the idea of really using your wingers as where their ability to create width is almost a non-factor. Like, everything else has to be important. The pressing, the running the lines, the finding space between lines, the ability to cut inside and create chances that way. Like, all of our players that we signed, like, can fit into this mold. And it's curious because Augustine, he came from, in his academy days, he played as on the right wing every single academy match he ever played, except for like the last two, because they were training him up to replace an injured player on the left side. So he switched to the left. And so in cup games, he would play on the right, but in league games, he played on the left because they had a natural, true right winger. So his ability to shift, I think it was NYCFC seeing that and seeing him kind of fit on this side, because we saw him in the Open Cup match and he was on his natural right wing. That just his ability to stretch the field, physical talents. Obviously, we know he's extremely fast, but putting him on the right side creates opportunities like his goal, wanting to run into the box, having to underlap runs in front of him. Like, 3-4 times I caught when he got the ball in the midfield, he finds safety in the middle, and he does that. Like, you can only get that when you're playing him inverted, where he'll let Santi run in front of him, and then he can play. He has many options to play passes because Santi can pull center backs and whatever. And like in transition, it's very yummy of a prospect to think on. So I would say, like, I wasn't expecting him to, you know, score, but I also wasn't expecting him to be the best player on the pitch in his first start. But I did see probably what I wanted to see, and I'm fully satisfied with the performance he gave. Just his ability to manipulate lines with his own running and ball, and he's a super underrated handler of the ball. Like, his dribbling ability is extremely, extremely solid. So I loved all of it. I don't know. I could talk for days, of course, but...
Yeah, did you see... Let me ask just very briefly. Did you see the same degree of sort of impetuousness in play that you'd been seeing in the... Like, in your research initially? Does it feel like, Santi, but other parts of the NYCFC offense are, like, trained or training to give Ojeda room to be himself?
Sure. I think the system allows for that. I think... Mm-hmm. I like, we mentioned it a lot against Atlanta, but Ojeda also does it himself, this idea of setting up wide to create room in the midfield, and then that gives you enough space to play around if you have dribbling ability and if you can be comfortable in your passes between the lines. And that's hard. That's a lot to ask for a young player. We ask it of all of our players. But Julian is very good at doing that, setting up wide, playing inside, creating nice combination passing. Augustine just did the same on the opposite side, and it creates this playground for both Santi and Keaton to play in, and that's what was probably the most beneficial in this match. They didn't play at the same time, clearly, but that was super exciting. What did you think of Augustine, and second question, what do you think of my new nickname for him, which is coming? You can't, it's when I want something, I get it, baby. And he is the goose Ojeda.
Okay, I'll support it. I'll support it because I support my friend Trey more than anything
that's
else.
Not enough for me. I call him Goose because, like, Trapito, like, okay, fun, but, like, he's a New Yorker now. Let's create a new name for him here. His nickname, you know, with friends, teammates, coaches, is Agu, which, okay, that's another, like, South American nickname. Maybe it doesn't flow off the tongue for everyone following him here, and we want to make him feel at home. And I'm like, well, Agustin, Goose, and also when he runs, it's like a little goose flapping his big old feet, like, you know, waddling around.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, I see the imagery.
Goose.
I buy it. It's not terribly
and when
flattering.
And he scores, you go, Goose.
Put out
this
an APB.
This is the soccer I care about.
Tweet it out right now.
I tweeted it throughout. Thanks for following our own account, because I was tweeting throughout the game about the goose is loose. And then the homie Rory.
That's true.
The fantastic comic artist. Titled his most recent cartoon "The Goose Is Loose," so it's in here, baby. The goose is loose.
Work. You're right. I hadn't put two and two together to get goose. What do I think? I mean, my takes are always the more boring ones, but for me, I'm just glad to have somebody who, when the ball is at his feet, is going to do something with it. You know what I mean? And not going to take 5 minutes to set up like the opportunity to do something with it. For me, it's the hunger. It's the hunger is on display and in game, and is like a positive influence on the entire rest of the offense, right? Like, say nothing of the technical ability, to say nothing of the dribbling. It reminds me, and this is a little bit of a knock on wood moment, but like of the nice things that we were saying about Magno early on in his tenure at NYCFC, which is to say the gumption alone is worth having him in the field, because he puts pressure on everybody else to perform and to be as fearless as he himself is playing in this moment. So I'm obviously pro.
That's a fantastic point, because I think, again, I just want to cushion all this praise by saying, like, I think he could. There's still, his ceiling is much, much higher than what we've seen, and I'm excited to see what he can do. And I'm still curious as to see whether he can be a dynamic goal scoring big piece of an offense, or if he is just the kind of adjacent but solid offensive weapon that he is right now. Like, we'll see. We don't know what he's going to end up being. He's learning. We assume he's going to learn some good things with the kinds of offensive personnel we have. He will surely develop into something interesting, and hopefully that it will just raise the ceiling even higher. But we don't know. But just to jump off of your point, I think it's an excellent one, because there was a level of risk taking in this match that was good. We mentioned about stylistically and tactically, this team has been much more focused on a more risk taking, risk reward type of system. This is different. This is a individual risk taking that we saw from Agustin. We also saw it from Santi. I think it's just he's just gaining a little bit more confidence. It's with Santi, I think it's all mentality, frankly. We know the physical talents and his skill on the ball and everything. It's just, can he make everything second nature? But he was taking a little bit more risks, and Keaton Parks, where the risk of the system and the risk of the individual overlap is simply within Keaton Parks, where he has to manage his midfield by himself. And in this game, he did a fantastic job, both offensively and defensively. And he was taking risks the whole time. I talked to him after the game, and he was like, yeah, man, in this match, I decided to take more risks. And he did, and it paid off for the most part. Like, I think a lot of people can fall into this trap where you're watching, and I include myself, where you watch a player and they're making more high-profile mistakes than they might have done in recent matches, that can leave a bad taste in your mouth and kind of color over the performance of a player. So I can understand if some people had that opinion of, like, Keaton Parks' game, where there was a few, like, very errant passes and bad dribbles. But on the whole, his ability to turn our defense into offense is not just important offensively, but important defensively. Like just relieves the pressure on the defense from what might have been 15 seconds to a minute to now 4 minutes of our possession, you know? And that kind of collective risk-taking of Agustin, Santi, Keaton, and Hannes Wolff all playing so much faster in this match than they have in previous matches. And like, I think that's probably one of the biggest keys to this match is creating the width, playing centrally, and playing fast and with a level of risk-taking that paid off.
Do you think that that's just because we're playing against an enemy that really could not control the pace of game against us? I mean, like, is that a game plan you can run against anybody else? Just to speed things up? Or, like, you know, or were we simply in control enough that we had the liberty to do that and that we shouldn't expect to see that kind of pace even after these players get more comfortable with it?
That's a great question because, like, NYCFC has always been a possession team but has not really been like a push the pace of play team very much. Maybe there's like a stint in 2019 we might have been that kind of team, but for the most part we've tried to be as methodical as possible. So obviously playing against New England has to have some part in that, and I guess we'll see. I think it's a good thing to look at going forward, but I think it's a way that accentuates the strengths of a lot of the players we have. And not just, again, not just offensively, but defensively as well. Because the offensive players also have to play defense in the system. It's a team defense system. And they did well.
Can we talk about the defense a little bit? Can we talk about the return of Ilenic this week?
Sure.
Who I think had, like he had some pretty solid like moments with the press. Seemed pretty proud of his instrumentality in the defense. Did you feel like, do we feel like we've reached a, I mean, like the defense has been slowly gaining ground, gaining confidence, looking firmer and firmer as we move on. Did it seem that way to you? Like it's not just on the Iceman's shoulders anymore? Like there's a more like full on defense, holistic defense happening on NYCFC?
There is. There's still a little concern. I think the discipline positionally is still weird to me. You know, New England didn't have too many chances. They had enough to make it scary. Obviously, Freeze had to make 6 saves. But for the most part, those chances were few and far between. But the thing that makes me the most nervous is like there was a few, the big Freeze save, the reaction save to the header right in front of him, a huge save. And that opportunity came from an early cross, and that's something we don't see a lot in MLS, and not a lot of creators make that happen too often, especially in like a set against like a set defense and not in transition. You'll see it in transition, but to see it kind of sprung, like surprise, like our defense is not disciplined enough at this moment to be surprised and handle it well. I think they can handle pretty well closing up passing lanes and being aggressive on the ball is like two things we've done extremely well. Just like the ability to kind of know where, and again, these things take time. And as you said, like we're seeing a lot more chemistry defensively and that's good, but the ability to just react, but ahead of time, like understanding that early cross might come in. you know, these things are still, some of those lofted through ball stuff like that. It's tough, but I mean, it's plaudits all around for the most part. Obviously like a 2-0 win with a goal at the death against a over their skis team. That's awful is not necessarily something to write home about, but for this team it is, because it's these moments building on each other. It's about building each and every week, and that's what it is with a young team. It's about resetting the expectation every week, and I think that was what was so good, because again, it's like players improving week to week is great to see. Hannes Wolff, I think, was much better. Hannes Wolff, number one in possession value in the league this week, which is crazy. Because his ability to dribble the ball into tight spaces that we saw so early in this season has reemerged, and his ability to get into good positions and for Santi to find him was great. James Sands just, again, cannot say enough about how well he's handled the last few weeks. Who are the 10s he's faced? Lucho Cosa. Who else? Who'd we play? Miami. I forgot who they had. At the 10, but Thiago Almada and now Carlos Gil is like, that's three elite tens that he's essentially, for the most part, shut down. He didn't do anything. And a lot of that is due to James Sands' work, kind of anchoring our midfield. So plaudits all around from me.
We got to probably talk about... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was trying to find a good transition into what I know you're about to say, and I couldn't find one myself.
You're wrong about it, I feel. Because I'm what you think I'm about to say, I was like, maybe I won't bring it up at all this round, I think, if I am the psychic that I assume that I am. I just wanted to talk about the insult to injury goal and stoppage time from Fernandez.
Sure.
A little brace from the second Argentinian, Julian Fernandez. Dope, cool, fun, but does it tell us anything?
Yeah, I think it tells us that this is a guy who's not played extremely well in his appearances this season. And when we talk about pushing pace of play, like Julian's probably the least equipped to do that on this team. At the same time, there's obvious skill. I mean, I'm in fucking love with his ability on the ball and his left foot. Both of those things are just things you drool at. And when he has that confidence, again, he's in the position battle, and this is new for him at this team. And seeing him, you know, score that goal, that's confidence. And we know he doesn't lack confidence. We've seen him take shots before, but a more determined match from him, even in his few minutes, was really impressive. And I love to see it. I think so. Who do we start next? I thought the Agustino Heda was like a great surprise. Does it make more sense to keep Ojeda starting and tie our legs and then have Julian go against maybe a slower opponent when he's fresh? I mean, that makes a lot of sense and probably led one of the reasons why he had a good game. Or do you want Julian to start and then Agustin Ojeda, who's just going to be the fastest player on the pitch when he's on, do you want him to go against tired legs? I don't know. It's like, you know, decisions. And then when Talos Magno comes back, what the fuck do we do at all? I don't know. We're still working it out. Still the beginning of the season. Nick Cushing doesn't pick starting 11s until like 8 weeks left in the season. So we got a lot of time.
Yeah, it opens more questions than it answers is what I'm hearing from you, which is the way that it certainly felt, like that this game felt, it, frankly, besides just being like, oh, the pleasure of having a win under our belt after so much time, not the pleasure of seeing the way that this team can play when given the opportunity by a much weaker side. The other thing is just like, it's not clear how much of this can be reapplied, right? Like, it's just clear that we have more options and more investigations. And I think maybe we just saw a little bit more of what's been on the training pitch demonstrated on the field than we usually get to. And that's why we're sort of like, okay. Nothing else to talk about, right, Trey?
You really just want to avoid the conversation altogether?
What the fuck are we going to say that isn't the same thing every week?
Yep, you're right. I think people know how we feel. It's tough, but what are you going to do?
Or, not feel. Like, my feelings haven't changed. Yes, bench him. Or don't. You know? Like, what the fuck?
It's a crap.
All I can do is what everybody else is doing, which is just shut the fuck up and see what happens.
I think the only interesting conversation around Baccarat is how... It's like an eclipse, not to like, would have been a better analogy if I thought of it last week, but how often do you see a striker this skilled and this good at getting in positions and this just looks so natural at that position? That's really, I think he's gotten better at being a striker, which is ironic, and then not score. It's shocking to me. The amount of traits that he shares with, and this is like blasphemous to say, and this is my hottest take of the week, but I love it, is like, there are moments where I'm watching him, I'm like, oh, that's like Tati. Like, just his tendencies of like where he runs into space and how he kind of gets around defenders and stuff is like super Tati-esque. Obviously, there's one clear difference between a golden boot winner and someone who can't fucking score to save his life. So I'm very aware... Don't clip that first part out because I'm aware of how ridiculous that comparison is. It's crazy. I just want to couch it with like, he's obviously like, you got to score some goals, my dude. But also the shooting on this team outside of Baccarat, also fucking awful. It just isn't as important as a striker being bad at finishing, but it's not nothing. How many sitters, DeSanti and Hannes and even Kevin O'Toole and Keaton, everyone is just missing and missing and missing. It's not just Bakrar is the only thing keeping this team from being good. The idea that you put any other striker in there and this team becomes top of the table is a fallacy. It's a dream. It's nothing. It doesn't exist in reality because this team itself needs to take better of its non-Bakrar chances. Regardless.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, of these, I don't have the page up, but of these 17 shots, how many of them were Bakrar shots?
I think two.
Sure.
Let me see. Hold on. I don't want to lie.
Hyper focusing on it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it.
I don't know why I screamed yeah right there. Hold on. It's my green, my green juice. Yeah, you only had two shots.
So direct your ire elsewhere.
Santi had three shots, zero on target. Hannes had three shots, one on target. I think that was the block that went to Ojeda. Malachi missed the biggest sitter of the game. And we love that boy. Can we show the same kind of... No, I guess we can't. I just want to like contextualize kind of like... It's like a flu is going around the team and perhaps Bakrar is patient zero, but everyone else got symptoms, my dude.
Yeah, sure.
But final thoughts, Malachi Jones. Extended minutes from him, not just Ojeda, was not the only two-team, two-first-team minutes that we saw this week. That was a question. What do you think?
I got nothing. I got no.
You got nothing about the golden boy.
What do you think, Trey? Let me reverse. Let me play the Uno reverse card on you.
Here's what I think. This is gonna sound.
I think the biggest comment that you can make is, I don't know that there was much of an impact, but I don't think that is. I don't know. I would qualify that by saying like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I slightly disagree, but I do like it's impressive that a draft pick not only is signed by the team, but it was getting a real run of play just this early into the season.
Sure.
And clearly, like he is super comfortable on the ball. Like he's not scared of the lights or anything. Like when the ball's at his feet, he's so different of a player than when the ball's not at his feet. He's just like his ability to run with the ball and get and distribute is like he fits right in. The thing that I found interesting watching him, and it's great to watch soccer live, of course, because you can focus on things. You're not dictated by the camera moving or the cutaways and things like that. You can actually focus on what you want to. Watching him when the team was not in possession, you could see why the coaching staff thinks he's not ready because he just was unaware. It took him a long time to get comfortable in that sense of like knowing where he was in relation to other players, making sure he was in the right line, making sure he knew when to press, like all those things. And his tackling form was like not good. He's a forward, I get it, but this is a team where more than most teams in this league, the forward's got to know how to stick a foot in to make a tackle, and his tackling form, I'm sure it's something he just didn't have to do in college. So you could tell like that side of his game needs a lot more work, and that's fine.
Well, so what's getting him the run of play here?
His ability, his physical talents, and his ability to be direct with in possession. Like that was very cool to say, like when this team wants to be direct, you got a weapon right there in Malachi who's just like unflappable when he's running at the goal or when he has the ball, and that's super impressive. It really is impressive. Like I don't want to dump, like I'm making a slight criticism on him. This is not, I don't think he's like so far away from being a super useful or talented player. I just think like he's got to work on one part of his game, but the other part's almost like completely fleshed out. Super impressive to see him, you know, spraying the ball. It's like we don't really have wingers on this team that like to spray the ball around the field, and he seems like he can be, and that's cool.
Mm.
But just gotta
just don't look like it's your first day of class in high school when you're asked to play defense. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like looking around like, oh my God, what am I doing? That's it. Good kid, though. I like him a lot.
He seems great. He seems very cool.
And Matt Freeze was amazing again, of course.
Yes, yes. Of course, of course. Do you think... This is also moving into talking points territory.
I'm trying.
But do you think that... I don't know, that there's a reasonable possibility that we see him shift over to the twos this week?
Ooh. Maybe that's why you got to run a play? Because he... I don't know. Maybe.
That's tomorrow. I don't know.
And probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
he yeah. He probably will. We'll probably see both of them, right?
At this stage, I mean, like, we're up to round three, right? Like, it feels like we're... Yeah, exactly.
It's like the real tournament now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's so cuspy, you know? Like, it costs you sort of nothing to try to, like, give him some juice.
Yeah, that's like our deepest position, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Well, that would be fun. That'd be a good time. Shall we take that as an opportunity to pivot and go straight into talking points?
We shall.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
That was the Talking Points theme song. These are the Talking Points, and we're kicking it off with the continuation of NYCFC2's run in the Open Cup. Round three is right around the corner. Perhaps it's happening while you're listening to this. If we can get our podcast out in a timely manner, you will see NYCFC2 take the field against Hartford Athletic. Our old friends, Hartford Athletic, our former hosts, the couch we used to crash on, Hartford Athletic, tomorrow, Wednesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Trey, have you done any background research on this? What can we expect from a Hartford Athletic in the third round of the U.S. Open Cup?
I've done, you know, cursory research and looks and watching. I think it's, you know, one of the worst picks we could have gotten because they're a good, solid USL championship team, and we have to play them away, and that's like the worst draw we could have gotten. But it's still an opportunity for us to go out there, get a good experience, have some fun. Let's see what the kiddos can do. The kiddos are still rolling, by the way. Just won 6-2 against New England, too. But they have some great USL veterans. They're like a really solid USL team. Romario Williams is a USL legend. I mean, he's a goal scorer everywhere he goes. A former top MLS draft pick. Chapman and Asiadu are also big. You know, they have lots of experience, and I think I'm right about that. But it's hard. You know, Doug, I can't watch every MLS and USL game. But
my friend, no shade. You don't hear me piping up about Asiadu.
But also, that's my understanding. Like, the big thing that sticks out to me is Romario Williams. Like, he's found his niche in the U.S. soccer period, and it's being one of the best nines in USL year after year. That's obviously going to be the biggest threat. But the fact that they just are a staple of, like, veteran adults in the room. This is not like NYCFC 2, and we shouldn't spend too much time on this game because a lot of people are going to listen to after. But the last time we played, the twos played a bunch of adults were against amateurs, frankly. And right. And now they're playing real ass, full careers, borderline MLS players. This is going to be a different game. And these are 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds.
So help our listeners to understand exactly what makes it different. What are the things about the way that NYCFC2 is playing right now that could be exploited by a professional soccer team? That's going in there to deconstruct them and make them look and feel like high schoolers.
I think it's that they're going to force them to be reactive as opposed to active. This is not, you're not going to be going into the match thinking I mean, it'll be clear the second you start playing that this is not like you're playing equals and you're trying to, you know, confident in your own abilities that you could win possession, keep possession, and use that possession. This is not going to be that game. This is going to be Hartford will know how to defend. Hartford will know how to keep possession, and they will know how to use it. So can you be a good reactive player at that age? I don't know. Like, the good thing is our young players have high soccer IQs. Carrizo and Shore and Ariave and Baera, all super smart players for their age, and that's positive. But can they? They certainly are not error-free players, and no one would expect them to be. They are going to make turnovers. They are going to have turnovers. They are going to make sloppy passes, especially around the box, and they're going to be facing veteran defensive midfielders. So how can you navigate that? I think they need to be a little – they're going to have to learn as the game goes on, and this will be a great test for them. Can they settle into a game against a team that just has – literally 10 times more professional experience than them. You know, we'll see. I'm curious. I'm not expecting a win, to be honest, but would be awesome. And I think regardless, this will be good for them unless they get blown out like 10-0, which I'm not expecting. But I think...
And even then, there's a moral lesson to be had there.
Do we have a chance? Sure. Is it a great chance? Probably not, but it's certainly a chance. And they should be confident in how well they've played, not just here, but also in the GA Cup, and that they need to lean into their youthful confidence and try to just treat this like it's a game that they can learn from, as opposed to a game they have to win. And I think that's going to be a big key for them.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that they're going to be coached to win it as well, right?
Oh, like, of course, yeah.
And particularly coming off of the momentum, I think you're going to see a more aggressive. This isn't just going to be this isn't a fucking exhibition match. It's not a preseason match. It's for real marbles, and I think they're going to be. Would you say? I guess is it fair to say that like this is an opportunity for star making performances as well on NYCFC 2? Is this a chance for people to like to get some name recognition?
If only because it's the U.S. Open Cup. Like, this is going to be the most eyes that are on them in a long time, and probably will be until they start their real professional career, you know? That's beyond a development league. And if they can take advantage of that, like, Ariave seems like, honestly, seems like on the cusp, cusp is the word of this podcast, is like on the cusp of maybe getting to that second level of like, oh, like, has all the tools where he can be a functional professional player. Like, that's exciting. Carrizo obviously is like in a different mold where the talent's already there. It's more about consistency and physicality. But some of these players, they just have different kind of levels of where their skill sets are. But any one of them could certainly jump out. Or is it going to be a star making for like Taylor Calhera, you know, who is the veteran of the team, even though it's only his like fourth, fifth professional game. Can he parlay this? And if he could score two goals, like, guess what? If we cut him loose, like we did MD Myers, well, he can have an MD Myers career and go to a USL championship team. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that's not outside of his mind is thinking, oh, I can secure myself as a USL championship level player, you know, because college kids usually get their run out at USL too because they're not allowed to get paid. But can they see themselves at that level is going to be big.
Shall we keep the theme of competition conversation going and talk about the Columbus Crew's massive victory in the CONCACAF Champions League, a victory struck for all MLS and all of the United States against Liga MX. The Crew went to Tigres and beat them to win this cup. I'm interested in what you think about, you know, where the Crew are at right now. It's a marvelous side that is like only continuing its run of form, but also what this says about the relationship between U.S. soccer and Mexican soccer in this moment in history.
I don't know how much it says about that second question. I think the Columbus Crew are the vanguards of that conversation and are the shining star and the unique example. I don't see their victory as some kind of tide changing in the relationship between these federations. Because as many other people pointed out, and this is not a unique point of view, is like the reason every other team sucked, they don't also, obviously they don't have the talents of Cucho and others, but they don't have the coach. And the reason the other teams lost, frankly, is money, is a salary cap. Because if you watch Miami, they completely fell apart. But a lot of that is, you know, they've had a fuck ton of injuries. And then if you can only have a certain amount of DPs where you can put your money, well, a soccer team's 11 players and you're only as good as your worst player. So when you have injuries and then you're to your backups that aren't that high level compared to how much some players are getting paid in Mexico, and then you're filling those spots with developmental players and on smaller rosters like that certainly aren't getting paid that much. The money, it goes down to money. It's just, we can't compete with Mexico if our backline starters and top of bench are not at the quality of the Mexican teams, at least the high level Mexican teams. There's bad teams in Mexico, don't get me wrong, but like seeing some of the names that come off the bench for Monterrey and Tigres and some of these other teams, you're like, holy shit, like, that guy's good. I've seen him before. Like, I know that guy's a starter. He's super good. He would play in MLS easily. Why is he on the bench in Mexico? And it's like, oh, because they invest in making sure their team is deep enough to compete solely for these extra trophies. And it would be interesting, to put it lightly, to see if MLS teams could also... If MLS was to have some kind of... I think it'd be awesome to have a salary floor as opposed to a salary cap. Would be super cool to see. Like, obviously that will help. But also if you get rid of the salary cap, yes, there are going to be bad teams in MLS, but at least you will see which owners decide that these competitions are more important and invest in deeper squads. At the same time, I love the parody of MLS. It's unique to the world, and it makes this league so exciting. But you can only rock fight each other in MLS so long and then get embarrassed on the international scene so long. But with Columbus, they've managed, just with an elite scouting network elite talent evaluation and coaching. I mean, that's it. It's coaching. Like, I'm sorry, Melda Amundsen, we love him. I think he was a fine MLS player when he played with us. But he lost his starting job to Kevin O'Toole. And he couldn't beat Goody for that starting role. So he goes to Columbus, and he plays in a completely different position that does not exist on NYCFC. And he thrives. And it's a lot to do with, you know, that coaching and that evaluation of talent. It's just something that is an eclipse moment for that team. And I love watching Columbus, man. I'll watch them any day. Like, I love Cucho. He's so fun to watch. I think Cucho is one of the best three players in this league. I mean, that's not even a hot take. He just is. And so that one of the best three players in MLS is certainly going to look good against any team they play, be it Mexico, anywhere else. Fun game. And like, the biggest thing was mentally, like, holding onto the result and winning penalties in Mexico is insane. That's like, talk about mentality. I don't know how many teams can do that.
No, it's sick. It's very, I mean, they're feeling themselves. There's and justifiably so. Trey, the cube is coming. This was a surprisingly emotional moment. We haven't talked about it. No, because the pod dropped, I think, later the same day when it happened.
We mentioned the vote. That's it.
No, we mentioned the vote. Yeah, but we didn't. But the vote hadn't happened yet.
No,
we've certainly talked about the cube. We've talked about the renderings, all that, whatever. I am saying
the vote's passed. Happened. Yes.
Yeah, and it felt like, I mean, it felt like a long time coming because it literally was. This has been cooking for so long. My favorite clip is the one that Chris posted, where in the back the two council members are are talking,
And one of them's going, like, football? Like, throwing the thing? And then she does a little, no, like, and then she does a little kick under the table. It's charming. It's very charming. Also, sort of insane that it, like, this far into the process, into the conversation about what they're voting on, this guy's still like, what football are we talking about? I mean, maybe he's being cute. He's probably being cute. Everybody's being cute. Everybody got very, very excited. Trey, who was the one nay? Do you know? Did you do this research?
It's a representative from out in Queens. And look, this is, I think it's one of those protest votes where a lot of people were giving him shit. And it's like, come on, guys, we won. Do you have to fucking... But, like, we're lucky to get... Do you know how insane it is to build a stadium in the five boroughs? There's a reason no one has done it. And that the newest building is what? The new Yankee Stadium, and before that, Citi Field, and that's it? Like, when's the last time? There's a reason it's difficult. And so when you win the boxing round, you know, fucking 47-1, you don't have to be mad at the referee. They gave the point. That's not how boxing works, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it didn't have to be a murder. It's okay that this passed 47-1. And also, that guy made some good points. Some of it was ill-informed, I think, but because, like, I think people just aren't aware how politics works. Like, sure, if you know something is confidently...
Were the points mostly just, like, the talking points against stadiums in general about neighborhoods or economic gutting or sort of things like that? Was it kind of a general suspicion of this economic model, the way that one might be of like a new casino coming in?
Yeah, it's the we're not paying the property tax on the stadium proper. Right. The land around the stadium will have the property taxes, but NYCFC will not be paying the property taxes. Even though they're paying, you know, for the land on a lease, that's 49 years. And with inflation, like, more than enough, we're going to be paying back what we owe, and not even considering stadium revenue and merchandise and tax paying and people's salaries and paying those taxes. Like, the money's going to come out in the end just fine. And this is the most friendly stadium deal, I don't know, in this country in a very long time. But, you know, it's not perfect. Like, I'm sorry, but you can't build something this big, you know, with these kinds of powers involved and have it 100% ethical. It's just not going to happen. And me, as someone who is very critical of these things, you and I both, I'm sure, like, it's not perfect. And I don't think it ever was going to be. I'm just, like, fully aware that this is just the best it's going to get. And if we wait to try to make this deal even better, it just was never going to happen. And the fact that it got this good, I think, shines very powerfully, frankly, on, you know, an organization in NYCFC and City Football Group that not necessarily has been the most financially or ethically positive or in the sunshine. But this in particular, I think, is a little bit different. And I, you know, applaud all parties around on that. Dicks in mouth, baby. But he made good points. Like, I'm not going to argue. He made a few good points. Like, you know, and again, just to get back to, it's the politics of it. Like, if you know something's going to pass unanimously and you want to make a political point so that it's just on your record, or if you have to fight a casino in the future or any kind of big things, you can get the fucking money behind you to say, look what I've said before. I've said this is not good. So we can push for better in the future. And I'm okay with that. That's how politics works. Sometimes you make a protest vote so you can give a little speech about what you truly believe in. It doesn't mean that there's some kind of existential threat or that they're an enemy of the stadium or anything like that. It's nothing at all. It's all copacetic. I have no issue with any... If we passed with one vote, I would be happy. So I'm not pressed.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, and it's hard to... It's such a weird thing. The sort of, like, sports crossover into, like, politics is a very complicated thing. And I think we've covered the stadium with a lot of breathlessness, right? And ultimately on the side... Not even ultimately, but, like, pretty consistently on the side of its development. But there's a little bit of an onus to, like, approach any massive development project like this with a ton of skepticism. Historically... these kinds of projects are overpromised and underdelivered.
I think that there is, I think the reason that we have come down politically, not even like from like a fan base perspective, on the side of this stadium is because it like more has been done with this development project to authentically integrate it into the community and revitalize an already pretty like resource starved area than basically any comparable major stadium project. And most obviously it comes off incredibly flatteringly when you hold it up against like the Buffalo Bills fiasco.
But yeah,
it's still your responsibility politically to be skeptical of this kind of like use of municipal assets and municipal funds. And then when you go into it being like, well, everybody should be NYCFC fans, you know, like bringing fan base mentality to it.
Yeah.
As if you're rooting against the Red Bulls when you're rooting against Congress or, you know, city council members who are skeptical about your development project. It's a little irresponsible, you know, but it's something that we are a little bit guilty of stoking as much as anybody else.
That's for sure. I just think the tipping point for me is like obviously like gentrification is a big topic with a lot of things to talk about. And if, you know, and when you meet the people, like as we've lived in New York, you and I both like over a decade, when you meet the people affected by it, it's including ourselves, it's or been perpetrators of it, including ourselves, it becomes, you know, a lot more personal and a lot more real of what those issues are. The thing that pushes me over the tipping point of like being okay with what's going on, or at least like indifferent, is that I've been to Mets games for over a decade, and that was a fucking just a disaster area of nothing. I mean, it didn't provide anything. It was chop shops and nothing, and risk of violent crime and things like that. And one thing we know about NYCFC, even if it's for show, even if you have the most bad faith reading of it, is their community engagement and their volunteerism and throughout communities is like a big thing for all of CFG, not just NYCFC. And even if it's in bad faith, it is still community development and making sure that, you know, kids have a safe place to play soccer at night and that communities have a say in what goes on around big buildings like this. So I'll take that over a land full of chop shops for decades any day. And that's just mm-hmm.
Me as well, Trey. Me as well. Is there anything else to say about this? Do you have any feelings about it? Did you wish that you were out there on the ground watching the votes come in? Did you see any reactions from the first team? Reactions from the staff?
Nothing worth discussing. We all are aware. It was a big momentous day. It's exciting. Happy to have it happen. And I'm looking forward to the stadium, obviously. And I think I will be. I think the shovels in the ground might be the more emotional day, the more real day.
Sure.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. Trey, lightning fast precap. DC United, a dramatic drop of points to Orlando this weekend. Can we capitalize on their woes at Yankee Stadium?
DC United's such a weird team, man. So weird. They currently... I got the stats. Hold on. DC United currently only sit in 10th place. However, their expected goal differential is plus 5.1. which leads the Eastern Conference. They are, on paper, one of the best teams in MLS. And they score goals, and they play extremely well, and they have a new coach in our old friend Tom Cotton. I mean, Troy Lesen, and he certainly has them playing that that high-pressing, fast-paced, like kind of counter-pressing would be the most accurate and the most important thing. He's brought over style to DC United, and it's created a lot of opportunities. The most impressive thing is that Benteke, if the team was not in 10th place in the East right now, only due to their own bad luck and poor mentality, he would certainly be the MVP of the league right now, but unfortunately they can't hold it together. I mean, Benteke is currently the leader in non-penalty expected goals and non-penalty expected goals per 90. He is just... You want to talk about chance creation? He is that guy. And the most impressive stat, I fucking moved away from it because I was looking at their stats or whatever, is that he leads the league in aerials, one, and aerial balls played. And that's not just something just to mention off the cuff. This guy is doing it at a rate that this league has never seen ever before, and not even close, and will be 100 years before anyone dominates the air like Christian Benteke does for this team. It is insane. I mean, last year he was doing it, and it went under the radar because that team was all over the place and not very good. This year, right on time. Aerials won in the league. First place, Christian Benteke with 87 aerials won. Second place, Kevin Long, center back for Toronto FC. You want to guess how many he has?
No, I just 40. Want to hear it.
Third place, Lucas Bartlett, also of DC United, 31. Fourth place, Peter Musa, the new forward for FC Dallas at 25. And he's probably going to get a lot because he didn't even start the season with them. But it's incredible. Watching the Orlando game they just played, Benteke's scored a header, and then he had a headed assist. I mean, this guy just, if the ball goes into the box in the air, he will win it more than any player that has ever played in this league ever before or may ever play. It is an eclipse event. This is
hard because low-key, I do feel like aerial battles are one of the Achilles heels of Yankee Stadium. I think it's one of the reasons that we see set piece woes being like,
well, we'll be at so Citi Field, by the way. Just,
oh shit. Well, that I didn't know.
Well, regardless.
Well, still it's a baseball stadium and still this like field dimensions, right? Like the point of this is that we have a crunch field dimension. And that like that gives us a lot of advantages in a lot of spaces, but it doesn't give us advantages in the air, which makes me feel like aerial battles are going to like that. This is an unfavorable matchup for us regardless.
The thing, it is unfavorable. They're a better team than us. They play really well. They're a good team. Here's the one thing we have on our side. Two things. One, we're at home, obviously. That goes without being said. You know, we have that advantage. But the second thing that is most important, and you mentioned it, at least last week, had the lead and lost the lead twice in that match against Orlando. The last five games DC United played, they had the lead and dropped points. That Jesus. Is a mental. Yeah, Jesus is the right response to that.
It sounds like us.
That, exactly. Except they're much better at getting the lead. And however, somehow, much worse at keeping it. It is, I don't know how to describe their mentality. Because they do fight really hard. They just absolutely cannot do it for 90 minutes. And I don't know why. This team is so weird. Because they're very good. That I think Lassane, Tom Cotton, is like a good coach. I don't like him, but that obviously comes from our previous experience with him. But he's a good coach. The problem is like, can he get them mentally there to play 90 minutes? Clearly not so far this year. And I don't know if he can do it on the road. Frankly, I think we have a good chance. I think we match up extremely well against them. Personnel to personnel, piece by piece, position on the field to position by the field, almost all the way across the field, except for Benteke. Like, it's going to be really hard to keep him from getting chances. So we got to score goals, and it's good that this team has been a lot more efficient at creating chances over the last few weeks. And if we can generate the same amount of chances that we did 2 weeks ago at Citi Field against Atlanta, then we should be okay. But, you know, it's about just, like, keep that momentum. Keep it going. I'm really happy to see the guys hungry. Like, talking to Andres Pereira, you're like, oh, is this the start of something new? Like, are you guys going to feel this confidence? He's like, no. Like, we are still working. It is still the beginning of this. Like, they're very aware. He did like a, he didn't even say anything. He just like did a throat cut kind of like answer. Like, this is like, This is not some kind of, oh, the season begins now because we're winning and we're going to be good now. The team is very on the same page, the players, that we're playing better, but we have a lot more to go. We're much better than we've been playing even so. So they have to keep that mentality that they seem to have after the last match, and I'm excited to see it. Also, Cody Mazzell is the new goalkeeper coach for DC United, who was a very long tenured NYCFC player, even though we never saw him on the field. That's
well,
it.
So that'll be fun.
I think that's all I got on DC.
I think that's a perfect preview. Yeah, that's more than enough. God damn it. You know why we'll win, and you know why we'll lose. So where do you come down?
I think we'll win. I just like that mentality issue they're having, as well as us being at home. Not only should we win, but again, this home stretch, we just need to win a majority of these matches. And this is going to be 3 of 5, and we have one win out of the first two. We got to get at least two more, in my opinion. And this might be one of the more difficult ones of the next three, but it's certainly an opportunity. So will I be shocked if we lose? Not in the slightest. This is the best goal differential team in the East, expected goal differential team in the East. And shockingly, Alex Bono, who for what, since he started, since 2016, on this podcast, I can only speak for myself, has had a unique joy of laughing at his misery, just with how, which is awful, but he's been so bad for so many years. I think because he was getting like, I think he got a U.S. call-up before Sean Johnson or something one season.
Yeah, sure.
Truly an awful MLS career, considering how highly he was touted coming out of the, you know, joining his first, getting his first team minutes for Toronto.
I remember.
This season's been very different. He's been very good goalkeeper this year. Super solid. Finally all coming together for him. Still moments of weirdness, like that last goal they gave up in Orlando. He was just completely, I mean, he couldn't do much about it, but I'm still not convinced. He's been very good, but I'm wondering if he's having a weird year where he's just suddenly good all of a sudden and will crash back down to earth, or is he now just a better goalkeeper? I don't know. I'm curious to see. That's it. Oh my God, I added a new point when we were done. I think we win 2-1. What about
I'm less optimistic. I feel like I feel like we've got shots, but it feels like I don't see. Yeah, it feels more like a 1-1 match to me. But
I see it.
It's Bakrar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know what it is? It's a draw that feels like a win. It's a Bakrar 81st minute goal.
I like it.
Which is, I think, pushing it too, because it's not as if he hasn't made it full 90s in general this season. Like, I acknowledge that. So maybe this is me saying, just keep him on and see if that works.
Yeah, sure. I've got to try something.
Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls, Blue Balls Pod. linktr.ee/blueballs is where you can find Blue Balls NYCFC is where you can find our merch and our tip jar and help us keep the lights on. Good reviews also help keep the lights on. Word of mouth helps keep the lights on. But most of all, you are loyal supporters, and the love you show us at Citi Field or wherever you come, you help us keep the lights on most of all, because you keep us showing up every week. And we will catch you on the other side of DC next week with all of that support. Thanks so much. See you then. Bye.
Bye.